So I was just going to say that, you know, actually the video didn't say that much about Rinpoche, did it? But anyway, but I hope that, you know, really try to come on Saturday, even if you can only come for an hour or whatever. And, you know, partly because it's an incredible blessing to be in the presence of a holy being like that, you know, because we really don't come into contact with very many people like that in our lives. So even if, you know, we're not that spiritually motivated, let's say we leave Rinpoche's, you know, many people actually leave, you know, teachings, and, you know, it may not really resonate with them, and they go home, and that was the end of it, which is fine, actually, you know. But what they say is that the being in their presence actually creates a connection. So even if in this life we don't do much with that connection, or we don't follow the Buddha's teachings, or any teachings for that matter, but it creates the causes and conditions for in future lives to gain happiness and, you know, reach our ultimate goal. So that's one reason. The other thing, which is more useful, I think, is that, you know, when we see beings like Rinpoche, it kind of opens our minds, you know, opens our world in a way, you know, because we see ordinary people, we see ordinary beings, right? We don't see really, I don't know, for want of a better word, extraordinary beings, or beings who are not concerned by the eight worldly concerns which we've been talking about, right? And so, you know, when we see someone like that, we realize what the potential that we have. You know, maybe we can't realize it anytime soon, but we see what we can be. I think that's an incredible to see that is, or, you know, to create that seed in our minds, I think is very powerful. So anyway, so I hope you can make it. So why don't we start with a short meditation? We're already, let's see, did I need to say anything else? I've been asked to say all these things. I think Rinpoche's video was pretty much it. Okay. So why don't we do a short meditation, because we're already 16 past, it says. So let's take our few deep breaths. So a couple of things from last time. one thing was that I realized after I went home that, you know, we were talking about anger and why, you know, I said that Geshe-la and others have certainly said that that it is of the greatest harm actually caused by anger is not the person who the anger is directed at, but the person who is angry, right? And I mentioned that one of the reasons is that, you know, it creates more resentment, creates causes and conditions for further problems, right? And so it creates, you know, we create a negative seed in our minds, negative karma, if you will. And, you know, so we create cause and condition for negative things to happen in the future, more retaliation, more resentment. You know, it's the cycle continues, right? But I forgot to mention the other really important reason why anger is so bad for the person who is angry. Now, since a lot of you have gone through this karma class, I'm wondering if you remember what the other reason might be. What's the other reason? You do or you don't? Oh, okay.
Because it erases so much good karma.
Yeah. And anger, a moment of anger, they say, destroys eons, they say. Eons of positive merit that we have created. Because it's an incredibly, incredibly powerful emotion, anger, that is. And so, because of its power, and because of the negative intention that anger is preceded by, it has an immense power to also destroy. And it destroys the positive merit that we have created in the past. And so that's why it's a twofold, it's a twofer. You know, it destroys positive matter and creates lots of negative merit. So it's really just a bad thing in general, right? And So I don't remember what context it was in, but it was bugging me. These kind of things bug me because, you know, I should have remembered to have said it, right? So. Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm trying to not to see that Yankee shirt. I'm really having a hard time.
Is that you with the Red Sox?
I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm really having trouble. But anyway, yes.
Karma is never lost, though, correct?
Oh, no. So, I see.
So, in other words, anger erases. We said erases karma, but then again, good karma, but karma is never lost. So, do we mean, from a technical standpoint, that anger erases positive merit?
No, I mean, anger, okay, so whatever positive karma we create or negative karma is created, it's true that it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. However, it goes away in a moment of anger, right? So it stays until it gets destroyed by something, right? So positive karma can be destroyed by a moment of anger or other, you know, things like that. There is a way to seal karma, if that's what you're talking about. So in other words, even if you have a moment of anger, it will not destroy certain positive karma that you've created in the past. And the way that it happens is through dedication. That's why we always do dedication prayers. So if you have created any positive merit through whatever action, if you dedicate it and dedicate it with either of great compassion, that is, may it be of benefit to all beings, not just myself, but all beings, or you dedicate it with emptiness, right? With the nature, you know, may the eye that is empty achieve enlightenment that is empty. You know, I mean, the understanding of emptiness. If you dedicate with either of those two bases, right? Of those two bases, then the karma, the positive karma, is sealed, and it cannot be destroyed by anger later on. But other than that, if you haven't dedicated your karma, I'm getting technical now, then anger can destroy positive karma.
And we do the dedication with, for example, a seven-limb prayer that we do each day.
Seven-limb prayer has a dedication at the end of it, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of it, it says, Well, depending on which seven of them prayer you do, but there's a dedication at the end of it, yes.
The course that you toast.
Right. Yeah, so all those prayers have a dedication at the end of it, and that's the reason. That's why Geshe-la does a dedication at the end of the Sunday teachings. That's why we do a dedication here. That's why almost every prayer, the Tara prayers, the Seven Limb prayers, Lama Tsongkhapa prayers, the Shakyamuni Buddha, every one of them end with a dedication. Just for that reason. So, and they will end with a dedication with either great compassion or with emptiness, or both. If Islam is open, then it'll be both. Definitely. So, does that answer your question?
Kind of.
Kind of? Okay. Right. And so, and what we'll do today is, you know, we'll do a couple of more of the verses of eight verses, and I'll do the meditation again, because last time I ran out of time, and I will this time I really try to do it. The Tonglen taking and giving meditation practice. Just so you know, the eight verses that I've been going through are also known as Lama Zopa's translation. It's known as the ever-flowing nectar of Mahayana thought training. In any case, that's on the website, so it's actually on there now. So if you go to the Kadampa Center website, and unfortunately or unfortunately, you have to log in, do the member login thing. If you're not a member, just create a membership, right? It's free and easy. And so once you do that, if you go under somewhere, there's a, on the left-hand side, I think it says Discovering Buddhism or something like that. And once you're in there, you'll see it'll say Transforming Problems. Under the section Transforming Problems, you'll see the ever-flowing nectar, this eight verses by Lama Zopa, and you'll see two meditations, one of which I've been doing, right? And so we won't have class for the next 2 weeks because I'll be at Rinpoche's retreat for the next 2 weeks. And so we'll be back, whatever, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from today, right? So until then, if you would please read the material that you have, right, in the CDs or in the text that we have, right, for this class. And if you would do the meditations. I think the meditation, if we are able to do those consistently, you know, it definitely makes a difference, right? So what I would do is, if you're going to do it, then what I would do is you start with, you know, breathing meditation to calm our minds. Usually in the mornings is best, right? For obvious reasons, to do these meditations. Unless you're, you know, there's a few people or some people who are terrible in the mornings but much better at night. So, you know, if you were like that, then that's fine too. And so start with a breathing meditation to calm our minds. And we can do the practice. And you can just, you know, read each paragraph, you know, the Rinpoche's meditation, right? So you read each paragraph and you kind of really try to evoke that evoke that in your mind when he talks about it, right? So like that, you know, here I'll be reading it, so it's much easier to kind of, you don't have to go back and forth, right? But after a while, it becomes kind of, it becomes easy to, and you remember, you know, what it is that Rinpoche is saying, right? Okay. So last couple of times, so let's see, where's the text for the, oh, here it is. So the first verse we did was determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit from all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. I shall hold them dear, most dear at all times. So we discussed, you know, or we talked about why we should cherish others, right? So that was the first verse. And what are the benefits of cherishing others? So the second verse was, when in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. So that was about arrogant pride, how we, you know, tend to look at things with pride, and countering it with humility, Right? So that was the second verse. Third verse, vigilant, the moment a delusion appears in my mind, endangering myself and others, I shall confront and avert it without delay. So we talked about how, you know, our minds are constantly under the influence of delusions, right? We have various delusions of, you know, attachment or jealousy or anger, impatience, pride, various many things, right, that come up. And so why it's so important to try to stop them whenever they come up and how we can do that, right? Actually, we didn't talk so much about how we can do that. That's part of what we need to discuss. But one of the things that we did talk about was that why meditation is so key for vigilance, right? Is that only with meditation we're aware of what happens in our mind. And so, you know, only with that practice on the cushion, right, we get the ability when we are off the cushion or during our daily lives to be able to intercept, right, when the delusions come, right, when the pride, when the anger, when the jealousy, etc., when they arise, we're able to see them arising. And we're able to intercept them, and we can have the opportunity to take a different path, right? Because in the vast majority of cases, it's instinctual for us, right? It's like a knee-jerk reaction. So the only way to stop that is to be able to intercept them, and to intercept them, we have to do our practice and so forth and so on. That's why meditation is so key. And then also requires some self-discipline, right? I mean, for example, you know, we talked about gossip. Remember we talked about gossiping? You know, there was 10 non-virtuous. You know, did we do that in here? I was leading one of the Sundays, and I know I might have done it there. I don't know. But anyway, so, you know, there's 10 non-virtuous actions, right? Three of body, four of speech, three of mind, right? And one of the ones of speech is, you know, gossip or idle. It's called idle chatter or gossip, right? And the reason it's so bad is that, or it creates so much non-virtue, is that, you know, we engage in it very often. We do a lot of it. You know, we create little bits of negative karma every time, but we do a lot of it. So it all adds up really fast. And then so, you know, I remember one of the things, my first things that I tried when I was doing all this stuff and practicing self-discipline was trying to, you know, what to do when people are around and they're gossiping, right? And gossip here, we don't mean like just, hello, how are you doing, but really saying negative things about other people or being judgmental or looking for, you know, sometimes people look for reassurance from you, you know, that what they're saying is correct, expecting that you will add to their, you know, negative things that they've said about somebody else, right? Kind of like, it's like the reinforcement. Yeah, you know. So it's difficult sometimes. I remember that. And to know, you know, so I'm just using it as an example, right? I mean, those are the kind of things at least we can, you know, maybe we can't stop ourselves from getting angry, right? Or at least not at the moment. Maybe if it's something that we really suffer from, maybe it's very difficult to stop ourselves from getting angry. But there are other things we can do, like, you know, start the ball rolling somewhere, right? So you can pick something that's easier for you, right? For me, it was kind of like something like gossiping was relatively easy for me to do, right? To not gossip. And so So, you know, so I mean, so we can do one of two things. We can either, like, you know, if you take the example of gossip, you know, we can either redirect it, right? We can, I remember many years ago, great Lama Kirti Sensei Rinpoche, who is no longer around, he was saying that when, was it Kirti Sensei Rinpoche or Rinpoche? I can't remember. Anyway, he said that if somebody starts talks about something like that, you can change the subject by saying, hey, the weather's beautiful outside. Was that Chodron Rinpoche? So okay, you know people who do that, yes. So but he said that, and I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know if that would work, you know. But it was really funny, and he started giggling. I think it was Kirti Sensei Rinpoche. But anyway, you know, we can redirect it, finding maybe other ways of doing it. So that's one approach. And the other approach I took most of the time is that you just stay quiet. You know, at least, you know, you don't have to participate in it. And sooner or later, it stops. Or we just remove ourselves from the situation, right? So there's things like that we can do, right? And the other thing also it helps is not, in general, about non-virtuous actions or about, you know, these kinds of things is, you know, what they say is if we are always with friends who are always, you know, Friday nights they're going out to drink and parties and engaging in, who are not really thinking about their actions, right? It's very difficult to stay true to our path, right? So we have to kind of mix with people who are of similar values or similar natures or similar inclinations, right? So that kind of helps. You know, if we are able to, doesn't mean you cut off half your family or half your friends, but it does mean that we have to be more selective about what we plant, how we are doing things and who we are with, right? And so that's why being part of a community like this is very helpful, right? So, because other people do believe in the same things. So in any case, where was I going? Right, so that's true for just about all the, you know, all actions in general, right? Is that if we try to remove the influences as much as we can while we're on our present ordinary minds, right? Okay, so, and then we are on our fourth verse. Hang on, I got to get my notes out here because I took a couple of things down that I wanted. So we're on our fourth verse, which is about, well, let's read it first. So it says, whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. Whenever I see beings who are wicked in nature and overwhelmed by violent negative actions and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear as if I had found a precious treasure. So, you know, so there's a couple of things he's saying, and, you know, wicked in nature, it doesn't mean that they're bad, right? Because in Buddhism, there is no such thing as bad or one being bad. But it really means that someone who's overwhelmed by anger, intense anger, you know, hatred, you know, something like that, right? A moment of great passion, I guess, as they say. And the thing to remember is that, you know, it's difficult to remember when we're faced with it, but we have to try to remember that, you know, they're under their own karma just as we are. Right? And, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, every being is always, whatever actions they take, they're thinking, well, they believe that that is what's going to bring the most benefit to them, right? That's what it is. And so the real, truly, the compassionate thing to do would be to realize that, wow, you know, how terrible it must be for this person, right? Is that they're so much under the grasp or the grip of the delusions, right? That this is what they think is going to bring the best benefit, right? Because as we said before, like, you know, the anger that they're feeling is you know, destroying so many eons of positive merit, right? So it's just so harmful. But yet they think that that's what's the best thing that they can do, right? And the thing is that, you know, we're like just like them. They're not that different from us, right? I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, we get angry often too. So if we think of it like that, if we're able to find that moment of that space where we're able to say, wow, you know, how terrible it must be, then we don't react with, you know, we don't react with a kick in the teeth or whatever, right? Well, usually when somebody does that, that's how we react, right? We react with another zinger, right? Or, you know, a middle finger or whatever it happens to be, right? I mean, that's how we react. So if we're able to stop ourselves from doing that, then we stop the cycle. And maybe it doesn't do any good, you know? I mean, it's not like this is a silver bullet, right? Just because we don't react with anger doesn't mean that, you know, all our problems will go away. I mean, let's face it, right? That's reality. But what it does do is that, you know, I mean, we have to kind of see, you know, we have to kind of see what the long-term goal is, right? I mean, we have to separate between short-term and long-term, right? Short-term, we may not be able to change our world. Right, whatever we have, whatever we're facing over the next week, month, year, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, this lifetime maybe we can't change it that much, right? But what we can do is change what happens after, right? I mean, we have to think about it really long term, right? And these things work long term, and what we're facing today is because of our long term past mistakes, right? And so when we see people like Rinpoche, and I'm sure he's going to talk about this. By the way, Rinpoche, you know, it's interesting. Rinpoche is actually, the text he's using is the 8 verses. This text that we're talking about, he's actually, the teaching on Saturday is on these 8 verses. So, you know, you can't, I mean, you're discovering Buddhism done in one day. I mean, you can't beat that, you know? It just so happened, I didn't actually choose this text because Rinpoche is doing it. I just found out that Rinpoche is doing it. Anyway, so we have to think long term, and you know, when we are going to teachings and things like that, you know, all the teachings kind of dovetail together. You know, I mean, they all work together. You know, you can't just say that, okay, if I just practice this one thing, that's going to solve my problems, right? It's all kind of worked together, and it takes time and real, you know, practice and study and so forth to really understand, you know, to how it kind of fits together. You know, they all kind of work together, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, you take, you know, people, you know, if you have a really bad diet but you take lots of vitamin C, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's gonna fix, you know, if you take lots of vitamins, right, it's not going to solve your problem, right, because it all works together, right? So like that. And so, you know, when you see someone like Rinpoche, you know, you get this sense, you know, you get this sense of refuge, you know, you understand why, you know, here's a person who is, you know, taken, who's living the path, who has realized the path, here's, you know, so you see that, and then you feel his compassion. I mean, all this stuff, I mean, it's just, it's amazing how it works. And so, the same thing with seeing the long-term view. You know, as we study more, as we practice more, we see how it works long-term. And we're able to separate the short-term from the long-term. And that's what we really have to do. You know, we think that the transforming problem is, it may not transform our problems tomorrow, right? Sometimes it does, actually. I've seen that happen. Sometimes it does actually work like that. But not very often, unfortunately. But it does change our trajectory. I think that's the important thing to remember. So when we see people who are in great pain or chronic pain or mental pain or physical pain for that matter, we can kind of put ourselves in their situation and see what it really feels like. You know, my mother, for example, for many, many years, I mean, she's 80 now, maybe a little over 80, I'm not sure, 81 maybe. Anyway, but she's been in bad health for a long time. And you know, for many years, it was difficult for me, you know, not because it was I don't know about you, but I felt that it was a burden on me, right? That I have to deal with this, right? That was my main reaction, you know, which is pretty selfish when you think about it, right? But over time it shifts. You know, so finally in the last few years, I've been able to put myself in her situation. You know, even though she can be really she feel really, really helpless, maybe. You know, or she somebody always has to do something. You know, she can't do anything by herself. You know, so I feel resentful because of that. Or she is, she expects too much of me. Or, you know, I mean, there's so many things involved. I mean, you can figure it out. So, and, you know, so in the last few years that I've been able to put myself in her situation and really, you know, see what I would be like, you know, if I were in her shoes. And try to bring a sense of, so, you know, and she lives by herself in India now. I mean, she's been living in India for the last 20 years. And, so, you know, I went to visit her a month and a half ago, something like that. I was there for a couple of weeks. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, I went there and I said, you know, I will just go just so, because it brings her joy. I don't expect anything in return. It's going to be depressing, right? Because it's hard to see someone like that, you know, see someone in that situation. That's what I meant, you know, who is really can't leave the house very much at all, almost now. And depending on others, you know, who take advantage of her. And so it's difficult to be in that situation, right? But I just said, you know, I'll just go because it just brings her so much joy to see me. I'm her only child, right? And so that's the attitude with which I went. And I got to say, you know, it was just a pleasant visit. It was so pleasant. You know, because I just went there because I just said, you know, I'll just go there just to be with her. That's it. You know, I don't need to get anything in return. And, you know, I got to say that, you know, the teachings worked. And I'm not, you know, my problem, which is that her depending on me isn't going to go away, right? Until either her or my life ends, right? But at least I can do something about how I, you know, react to it, right? And it was interesting. I mean, it kind of like, so on my way back, I was thinking, wow. And it actually worked. You know, the teachings actually work. So, anyway, I'm just giving an example because it just popped into my mind because, you know, that's like one of the challenges I face, right? And you know, and you, I'm sure you face many challenges yourself. So, but you know, each of us, we have to kind of figure out how to transform our challenges. And then, you know, then we have some really truly annoying or difficult people in our lives, right? And so we have to. It's difficult to put ourselves in their shoes sometimes because there's so much baggage. Maybe there's so much already that's history that's there. But you know, but if we're able to somehow overcome that, and we're able to do it, or even to at least make an effort to have some sort of friendship, I guess, you know, or amicable relationship, then without writing, you know, before we write them off, right? Because we tend to write people off. And if we're able to at least, you know, put ourselves in their shoes and have a compassionate way of dealing with them, we have somewhat of a chance to have an amicable relationship. And maybe we do need to, like, step away, right? Sometimes, you know, if you have an alcoholic member of the family or something like that, where they obviously are ill, right, which is what it is, right, illness, and they won't do anything about it, we can't continue to be with us in that situation, right? But we have to be aware, you know, so sometimes we have to do the best we can. If we're able to help them, we help them. And sometimes the best way to help them is actually leave, right? I mean, you know. But we have to be aware, and so we're writing them off in a way, right? But so what I'm trying to say is we have to be aware of why we're writing them off, right? Or why we're doing it. I mean, is it for their benefit or is it just because, you know, sometimes we do things for selfish reasons, right? And maybe sometimes we can't, even if it's for a selfish reason, we're not, that's the best we can do, right? And so, and we're also, if that's what it is, then at least let's be aware of it. Let's face it, right? And we say, well, you know, we're human beings as well, right? We can't be a benefit to others because if we're supposed to be a benefit, we can't be a benefit to others if we can't take care of ourselves, right? So I think I guess what I'm trying to say is we make an effort with people, with difficult people. But even if we can't make any progress, can't, you know, have a relationship, whatever it is, let's just be aware of why we're doing it. And make sure that our intentions are good, right? And if we have to write them off, we do it in the least harmful way, right? Yeah. So you know, it's difficult to, you know, I always think about, you know, when they say in these teachings, you know, hold the rare ones dear, you know, and wicked in nature, hold them dear. You know, it's not easy, right, as you all know. But at least what we can do is even if we stop having, you know, a relationship with them or whatever, even then we can at least in our prayers, in our thoughts, in our meditations, whatever it is, in our dedications, we can hold them in our prayers, right? I mean, we can at least have that kind of intention, right? Is that even if they have been done great harm to us, that they were overcome by such delusions that they did incredible harm, that, you know, that we can still have a good attitude towards them, the best attitude that we can, at least we can, you know, come up with, right? So yeah, so at least in prayers and so forth and so on, we can kind of hold them there, right? That may be the easiest thing to do, maybe sometimes. Yes. Oh, right.
Yeah. Two things I thought of. One is, I don't know if it comes in this module or not, how they are our teachers, the difficult people.
Yes. It comes next, actually.
Oh. So
actually, no. I mean, it's part of this. It's part of this verse, actually, is to hold them as a precious treasure, right? Which is kind of, you know, they say to hold them like our gurus, right? And because they're a great opportunity, right? They're teaching us something, right? So they're a great opportunity for practice. And with gurus, how can you be, you know, angry with them or impatient with them, or, you know, because their basic nature is out of compassion, right? Kind of like, you know, our teachers are basically teaching us from their great compassion, right? So if we are able to see difficult people as our teacher, or as every difficulty as an opportunity, then we can kind of equate them with our gurus, right? We can see, you know, so we can try to see them through compassion. But that's really difficult for me.
Yeah, everyone. What I thought of is, isn't there, I don't know what reading it's in. I don't think it's on the ones that are on the CD. If it's in this module about actually what to do in certain situations, one I can think of is if you're jealous, to rejoice in the other person's...
Right, good fortune.
Yeah.
Yes, there's antidotes like that. You know, so for example, yeah, I mean, so rejoicing is a great example of how to kind of, as Geshe-la says, you know, turn it, you know, change something. To he says, if it's something negative, at least try to make it neutral, right? If you have a negative thought, try to change it to something positive. But sometimes that's just not possible. So at least try to change it to something neutral. But anyway, so if you have jealousy, then yeah, rejoicing is a perfect antidote, right? And there's various other antidotes like that, you know. But you know, and the is that I'm sure. What was your question?
I don't know if that's listed in the little white book, Transforming Problems.
Oh, I see.
Or somewhere else. I don't know, or if it's a different module or what.
I don't remember now. I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember where it comes.
Thank you.
So basically, the bottom line is, as with all these verses, you figured out by now, is to try to find a way to cherish the other person in whatever situation we're in, the best way we can. You know, sometimes maybe it's not much. It's not possible. You know, we're human beings. We can do the best we can. So sometimes it's not possible, but at least let's do the best we can, right? So that's the bottom line. And then in the next verse it says, when out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. When out of envy others mistreat me with abuse, insults, or the like, I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. So, you know, what did Jesus say? He said, forgive them, for they know not what they... Forgive them, for they do not know what they do. Right? Is that what? Yeah, they know not what they do. Right? It's kind of like that. Right? Because you know, it's in like with anger, etc. Right? I mean, when we're mistreated, when someone criticizes us, we tend to react again. Right? Here's where the zinger, you know, the zinger really comes here, right? And so we just create more and more this cycle, constant cycle. And, you know, we have to remember that it's because of our previous karma that, you know, this, the mistreatment is happening, or you know, if we're faced with difficult people, why it's happening, right? That's the main reason why it's happening. I mean, that is the reason why it's happening. So, and it is also because of our previous karma that we see it that way. I mean, that's the other thing to remember, right? It's, I mean, there's karma, you know, there's karma involved for that other person to mistreat us, right? For them to be deluded, to have a bad intention, you know, the negative intention, right? To harm us, right? And it's also our karma to see it as such, right? Because if we were Buddhas, then it wouldn't matter, right? I mean, they could have all the intention in the world to mistreat us, right? That's their karma, but we wouldn't have the karma to see it as such, right? So it's really like, so we have to kind of understand that, and when they do criticize us, etc., we just kind of, we have to know not to get upset, right? Which is also very difficult. Right. I mean, you know, it's funny, you know, I don't know, those of you who are married or have long-time partners, you know, you kind of, you know, there's these little things that they may say that bug them, you know, that you find annoying, you know, like, you know, I don't know, something happened a few days ago. I'm trying to remember now. My wife said something. She said, "Well, would you stop doing that?" And, you know, and it's interesting, you know, and I'm like, my first reaction is, God, what's the big deal, right? I mean, you know, it's, and I, you know, and then, you know, then you start going down the story, you know, I would go down the story of all the things that she does that annoy me, but I never say anything, right? Which is some of the passive-aggressive way of reacting, right? I mean, that's the passive-aggressive way of reacting, right? Oh, but how about the 5 years ago you did this, this, and this, right? But, you know, it's you know, but it's kind of like it's I don't know, it's so trivial. I mean, what I'm saying is that if we don't react with that attitude, right, then I guess the question is, if we don't react, what's the loss? Well, right. I mean, it's certainly the gain from the Dharma perspective, but we see it as a loss, right? If somebody criticizes us and if we don't react, we see it as a loss, right? Because we appear weak, or we appear, you know, whatever it is, right? That we can't stand up for ourselves. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right? And if we, you know, the question is, if we appear weak, so, I mean, first of all, are we weak? We have to look inside ourselves and see if we really are weak or not. And let's assume for the moment that we aren't weak, right? Then what does it matter if someone sees us as weak? Right? I mean, that we have to look into that, right? Is what if they see us as weak? I mean, what would it be? I mean, what would the world end, you know? I mean, I guess in some situations I can see that we have to, I mean, you know, if you're at work or if you're, you know, where your pay depends on something or other, you have to stand up for yourself. And I mean, this doesn't mean that we have to be a doormat. That's not what we're talking about here, right? We're not talking about where, you know, because being a doormat, it has this aspect of, you know, being powerless. Right, or putting ourselves in powerless in a situation of powerlessness, right? You know, there's internalization of anger, you know, resentment, right? There is a, you know, where we see ourselves as martyrs sometimes, right? And we, you know, I mean, so, and we see ourselves as victims or constant victims, right? That's totally negative. That's not what we're talking about, right? What we're talking about is not reacting to things where there's really no no reason to react. And we have to kind of see where those situations, when those situations arise. And very rarely is it, I mean, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm living in a fantasy land, but rarely I think is it that if we don't react, that something bad is going to happen. You know? And in fact, it'll change the cycle. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to cut the cycle, right? Because we tend to just, you know, react and the next person reacts and on and on and on and on we go, right? So that's what they mean, but I shall accept defeat and offer the victory to others. Let them have the victory. I mean, let them, you know, if they've sent us a zinger our way and we don't push back with another zinger, let them, you know, let them have it. What's the loss? I was reading somewhere, there was a story about Rinpoche. And there was supposedly, this was in Australia maybe somewhere. Anyway, so he was teaching and there was a guy sitting on the front row and I guess he'd been to a few Buddhism things. I don't know what the whole thing, whole story, but, and he was sitting on the front row and he was kind of interrupting Rinpoche in the middle and would ask him questions and, which is okay. Questions are, I guess, okay. But he was debating with him, if you will, you know, and people were, you know, the people around who were sitting there were, you know, like, you know, why is this guy challenging Rinpoche? You know, I mean, he's kind of seems to be filled with pride and so forth and so on. And Rinpoche was very, pleasant. He just continued to. You know, he just answered the questions as when they came up, or he would kind of talk to him. You know, during the teaching, he would talk to him and et cetera. And finally, you know, and Rinpoche didn't get upset. You know, he didn't ignore the guy. He just talked to him and interacted with him. And then at the end, you know, where you offer katas and and Rinpoche usually at the end he will give a person, well, I don't know if he will do it here or not, but like at the retreat and stuff, you know, when he leaves, he gives people presents, kind of gifts, little gifts, you know, as he's as you give him katas. And so anyway, so this guy came up with the kata, and Rinpoche just piled on gifts to him. You know, he just gave so many gifts to the guy, right? I mean, all the other people just got like a few things, a couple of things here and there, but this guy just got, he just cleaned up is what I heard. You know? And that was kind of like, you know, I remember this because of, you know, this thing about when others mistreat us or others, like the previous one was, yeah, the other wicked in nature who mistreat us. Or no, this one says, yeah, when out of envy or et cetera, others mistreat us with abuse, insults, or the like, or et cetera, I shall accept defeat and offer victory to the others. So it reminded me of Rinpoche, you know, because, you know, and the guy, you know, who knows whether the guy came back or not, you know. But, you know, he certainly would be more receptive to the Dharma, right? I mean, that was, you know, and Rinpoche also thinks about these things like we were saying, like an opportunity, right? To him, it's like a great blessing to face somebody who is challenging him, you know, because that's what he practices, you know? And this guy, you know, who knows whether he came back or not, but it probably created a decent impression on him, you know, that, you know, and it might bring him back, even if not to Rinpoche's teachings, but to some other Buddhist Lama's teachings or some other teachings, non-Buddhist maybe. But anyway, but to continue on the spiritual path, right? So that's like that, you know, I just thought of that. The other thing I read, which was about the previous verse, which was, overwhelmed by violent negative action and suffering, I shall hold such rare ones dear and found a precious treasure, right? The other story I'd read was, I don't remember all the depths of the story, but basically this woman, she must have been in her 40s. She wrote a letter to Rinpoche that she had been sexually abused by her father or stepfather. One of the two. I don't remember. And she hadn't been able to have any relationship with him or her mother for many decades. And it was really bothering her. And what can she do? And so Rinpoche said, you know, this is one of the greatest harms that one can do to another person. And so, but he said that, you know, you should try to see if there is any way that you can, it's different, you know, this is one of those things where it's incredible, how can you put yourself in another person's shoes, right? I mean, that's just, I can't even imagine how one does that. But anyway, but Rinpoche said, why don't you act out of compassion and you just, you know, give him a gift that you would like yourself, right? And she said, yeah, but he's the one who did this to me. And she said, and he said, yes, I know. But why don't you give him a gift that you would like and say that I'm sorry for the troubles that I have caused you, right? So, you know, so, and so it's interesting. So she wrote back and she said, Rinpoche, I did what you said. And, you know, I gave him a gift. I don't remember what the gift was. I sent him a gift and I said, I'm sorry for the troubles I've caused you. And she said, he broke down and he said, I've been trying to approach you for many, many years and I didn't know how to say sorry. I'm sorry. And, you know, and so she was able to, I don't know whether she was able to have a decent relationship. I can't, you know, it would be difficult, but at least she said she was able to have some relationship with her mother again and so forth and so on, right? So that's the kind of thing. It's very difficult to see how, to, you know, certain types of situations, what we can do, right? But if we can, in a way, try to change it and act out of some level of, you know, put ourselves lower, even though it's very difficult. I mean, in that situation, how do you put yourself lower, right? But if we're able to put ourselves lower and just swallow our pride a little bit and see the bigger goal and try to change it and change the way we're approaching it, right, we can change the situation. Right. That doesn't mean that every person who is in that situation can have the same result, right, with that same action. That's not what we're talking about, right? It's the karma that she created and he created and the entire family created and how it worked itself out in that through that action, right? But that doesn't mean that the next, you know, some other family with a different karma is not going to have the same result, right? But in that situation it worked, right? But that's why people write to Rinpoche, right? They write to Rinpoche with these kinds of difficult things, right? And Rinpoche gives advice, and, you know, it's... So sometimes it has incredible results. So let's stop there for these verses, because I wanted to do the meditation. But before we do that, I said last time that I saw that that remember Rahul was saying that there is a so if you read the Rinpoche's book, The Transforming Problems, and there's also another book that Venerable Sarah Thresher put together, Rinpoche's teachings on like how to. So how to practice daily about cherishing others, right? So, for example, so I'll read this, and then I'll say what Rinpoche said, right? So this is from Rahula Bhadra's prayer, who was this Indian master many centuries ago. And so I found this in a book, and I took the notes on it, and I keep it with me. So it says, on every occasion, pray tirelessly for the benefit of all beings. When you're going to sleep, think, may all beings attain the absolute nature. When you wake up in the morning, may they awaken as Buddhas. When you get up, may they have the body of a Buddha. When you dress, may they be clad with the ability to be ashamed to do wrong and show restraint before others. When you start a fire, may they burn the firewood of negative emotions. When you eat, may they eat the food of concentration. When you close a door, may they have access to the city of deliverance. No, when you open a door, may they have access to the city of deliverance. When you close a door, may they close the way to lower rebirths. When you go out, may I take the path of deliverance for all beings. When you go somewhere, may I lead all beings in the higher worlds. When you arrive, may I liberate the beings of the lower worlds. When you see someone happy, may all beings find the happiness of Buddhahood. When you witness the suffering of others, may all beings be free from suffering. So, you know, like that, it's... So what Rinpoche suggests is every action that we take during the day, if we can have this kind of attitude, if we think, whatever we do, even, you know, whatever action we take, have the thought of cherishing others, right? Even if we're not doing something overtly so with our action, right? And it's the, at the end, it's, you know, Geshe-la was saying on Sunday, it's the mind that creates the suffering that we face, right? It's the, you know, it's our minds that creates the suffering. It's also our minds that creates the happiness, right? I mean, that's what he said this Sunday. And so, if it is not the action, you know, when you open a door, when you close a door, when you go somewhere, when you arrive, etc., it's not that action that has any meaning. But if we have the thought of a positive intention behind that action, then it changes the action altogether, right? And over the course of the day, if we're able to see, if we're able to think like that, it changes all our actions. Because we can't do negative things. We can't treat others harmfully or with anger, whatever, if we're trying to do this on a daily, on a moment by moment or a daily basis, right? It's just not possible. And that's the change that happens, right? So, so that's why Rinpoche says, you know, when we get up in the morning to think about how we can be of benefit, to set the motivation for the day, and for every, you know, for example, when we are having our first cup of coffee, to offer it to our teachers, to the Buddhas, to all the beings, so forth and so on, right? You know, when we're washing our face, for example, or washing our hands, we think about, you know, may all beings be able to wash all their negative delusions, etc., from their minds, right? Same thing with washing dishes, you know, having breakfast or whatever, you know, we think about, you know, may all beings have food and shelter and so forth and so on, and may, you know, may they have what they want, right? When we're driving to work, this actually is a really easy one. When we're driving to work, when we're walking on the road, you know, you imagine that you're walking towards, you are walking towards liberation, all the beings are following behind you, you know, all the beings, you're leading all the beings to liberation, enlightenment, and all the holy objects, the statues, scriptures, so forth and so on, and all the Buddhas are all on our right, right? So we're circumambulating. We're always going clockwise, right? Like around the stupa. So he says we gain merit because we're thinking about circumambulating, and we're bringing, you know, we have the positive intention of bringing others to enlightenment. You know, when we're working, when we're picking up the phone to talk to somebody, you know, we try to do have the same, you know, before we pick up the phone, we can have that kind of thought, right? When I know, for example, some of you have met Venerable Amy Miller, who was the, you know, director of Miller Ripa Center, and I used to know her many, many years ago, and when she didn't used to be a nun, and she was working as a lobbyist in Washington, a lobbyist or, something like that. Anyway, she was a high-pressure job. Whenever somebody called her on the phone, she would let the phone ring 3 times. And while between the first and the third ring, she would have, she would think about, this motivation, right? So it changed the way she received the phone call, right? This was before the days where you had caller ID, so you didn't know who was calling you, right? Now it is a little bit more difficult to have the positive attitude when you know who it is who's calling you. But anyway, so like that, right? So all through our day, if we're able to have this kind of attitude, right? Every action that we take, if we're able to have this kind of attitude, you can't not cherish others. That's what it comes down to. It becomes impossible. You paint yourself into a corner. So anyway, okay. So let's do our, we have 15 minutes. So let's do our Rinpoche's taking and giving meditation, which is where. Yeah.
Is that on the DVCD?
No. No. It's on the, that's what I was saying, it's on the website. The on the our Kadampa Center website.
Okay.
So if you go to the website and you do the member login thing, then you'll see the under Discovering Buddhism, it'll have it on there. I think it's under the heading for this class, Transforming Problems. And the meditation's there too. Yes. Okay. So why don't we take our meditation posture, take a few deep breaths. So remember the purpose of taking and giving meditation. By generating great compassion, we take the suffering and causes of suffering of numberless sentient beings within ourselves and use them to destroy our self-cherishing thought, the source of all our problems. Set the motivation thinking at this very moment, all our kind mother sentient beings are experiencing great suffering. But they're also running constantly to create the cause for more. There's not even a second in which they can experience a moment's happiness. If a mother's suffering is not alleviated by her own child, who else will do it? Therefore, to release all mother sentient beings from suffering and lead them to ultimate happiness, I must attain the exalted state of a Buddha. The attainment of Buddhahood is not without causes and conditions. Its principal cause is bodhicitta, the great compassion. Therefore, I'm going to practice the profound method of taking and giving meditation. First, generate compassion by thinking how living beings constantly experience suffering, even though they have no wish to do so, because they're ignorant of its causes. Think how wonderful it would be if all living beings could be free from all suffering and the cause of suffering, karma and delusion. I myself will free them from all their suffering and its causes. As you breathe in, imagine you take all the suffering and the cause of suffering of other sentient beings through your nostrils in the form of black smoke. If you have an illness or some other problem, focus first on all the numberless other beings with that same problem. and think of all the other problems experienced by all living beings as well as their causes. As you slowly breathe in, as you slowly breathe in the black smoke, take in all the suffering and its causes. Next, take all the subtle obscurations from the arhats and the great bodhisattvas. There is nothing to take from the gurus and the buddhas. All you can do is make offerings to them. Black smoke comes in through all your nostrils and absorbs into the self-cherishing thought in your heart, completely destroying it. Your self-cherishing, the creator of all your problems, becomes non-existent. Like aiming a missile right on the target. Aim right at the self-cherishing thought, the target in this meditation. Take from others all the undesirable environments of the experience. Breathe in through your nostrils in the form of black smoke all the undesirable places the sentient beings experience. The black smoke comes in through your nostrils and down into your heart, where it absorbs into your self-cherishing thought and completely destroys it. The self-cherishing thought becomes non-existent. At the same time as your self-cherishing thought becomes non-existent, the false I that ignorance holds to be truly existent also becomes completely empty, as it is empty in reality. Next, generate loving kindness by thinking that even though living beings want to be happy, they lack happiness because they're ignorant of its causes or lazy in generating them. And even if they achieve some temporary happiness, they still lack the ultimate happiness of full enlightenment. How wonderful it would be if all beings had happiness and the cause of happiness. I myself will bring them happiness and its causes. Visualize your body as a wish-granting jewel which can grant all the wishes of living beings. Then give everything you have to every human being. Give all your good karma of the three times and all the happiness that results from it up to enlightenment. Your possessions, your family and friends, your body visualized as a wish-granting jewel. Also make offerings to all the enlightened beings. Human beings receive everything that they want, including all the realizations of the path to enlightenment. Those who want a friend find a friend. Those who want a guru find a perfect guru. Those who want a job, find a job. Those who want a doctor, find a qualified doctor. Those who want medicine, find medicine. For those with incurable diseases, you become the medicine that cures them. since the main human problem is difficulty in finding the means of living, image that each human being is sharp. Since the main human problem is difficulty in finding the means of living, image that each human being is showered. Okay, never mind. Then give to all the hell beings and completely transformed environments into a blissful, pure land with perfect enjoyments and no suffering at all. Visualize them as pure realms, as beautiful as possible. They become like jewel palaces and mandalas. All the hell beings receive everything they want and then become enlightened. And then for the hungry ghosts, transform their environment to a pure realm. Give them thousands of different foods that all taste like nectar. They have perfect enjoyments and no suffering at all. Their environment is pure and beautiful. The hungry ghost receives everything they need. But the ultimate point is that they all become enlightened. Since animals mainly need protection, manifest as Vajrapani or other wrathful deity to protect them from being attacked by other animals. They receive everything they want, and everything they receive becomes a cause for them to actualize the path and become enlightened. Give also to the arhats and the bodhisattvas. Give them whatever realizations they need to complete the path to enlightenment. After everyone has become enlightened in this way, rejoice by thinking how wonderful it is that I have enlightened every single living being. Then we dedicate. I dedicate any merits that I have thus created to the swift enlightenment of all sentient beings. May I become a Buddha to benefit all. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. And may that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. So I guess I'll see you 3 weeks from today. Yes, and so if you'd please, you know, if you'd read the material, if you have the, you know, if you have that supplementary book, great. If you, you know, want, if you could read that, and the meditations that are online, you know, if you. I think it would be really helpful. And one last thing I'm asked to say is you know, if you find these classes helpful in your spiritual path and your journey, then if you'd consider making a financial contribution or contribution any other way. And not because I get paid or anybody here. Very few people here get paid, actually. But mainly because just to remind ourselves why we do it is because generosity is a great practice. It's one of the six perfections, you know, the six great perfections of a bodhisattva, which are, anyway, I won't go into the six, but generosity is the first one. The reason it's the first one is because it's the easiest for us to practice. Before patience and before and joyful enthusiasm and before all the other things. So your generosity to a center especially is greatly beneficial mainly because it brings so much benefit to others, not because of ourselves, right? But because so much benefit to others. That's why they suggest to practice generosity, because it's the ultimate benefit, because it helps others to the path of enlightenment, not just gives them food or not just gives them whatever, the next meal, whatever, right? It actually helps them forever. So that's why it's considered such a great practice, especially giving to a center, or giving for the Dharma, basically, right? So anyway, and the most important thing is, number one, don't give if you can't, and give only as much as you feel comfortable or that you won't regret. You don't want to give and have bad feelings about giving later. So that's the important thing, right? So if you can, wonderful. If you can't, that's okay too. So thank you very much. See you in 3 weeks. Okay, and hopefully see you on Saturday.